Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and all major podcast providers. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please post a question on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@theorganicview.com. Today's show is sponsored by Austria's Finest Naturally Authentic Pumpkin Seeds and Pumpkin Seed Oil from the Steiermark, available at organicuniverse.com. Listeners of The Organic View can receive $1 off their purchase by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW. Also, don't forget to check out our contest section on our website to submit your information for our free monthly giveaways. For more information, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com/contests. As we continue our special series called The Neonicotinoid View, my special guest co-host Tom Theobald and I are going to talk to Michelle Colopy, who is the Program Director of the Pollinator Stewardship Council. We're going to talk about the recent decision in which the EPA must now vacate the registration for sulfoxaflor and how this is going to impact other chemicals that were granted registration by EPA. First, I'd like to welcome to the show Tom Theobald. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hello, Joan. It's good to be back.
And I'd also like to welcome to the show Michelle Colopy. Good afternoon, Michelle.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me back on your show.
Michelle, can you briefly explain what the Pollinator Stewardship Council does?
Yes, thank you. The Pollinator Stewardship Council is a nonprofit organization, and our focus is to defend managed and native pollinators from the adverse impact of pesticides. So we are all beekeepers working for beekeeper issues so that we can protect our bees from the impact of pesticides.
Thank you. Michelle, can you give our audience a little bit of history about this decision and how it came about?
Well, certainly. We appealed the registration of sulfoxaflor, which is a highly toxic pesticide to bees. We appealed this registration in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. It was an administrative appeal, which is open to any commodity group if they have an issue with a regulation or a rule developed by the U.S. government, that you can appeal that registration or that rule through the court system. So nobody made any money on this. There was no compensation. The lawyers did not make a ton of money. We worked with Earth Justice, which is a nonprofit legal counsel organization. So we paid them like about $350 basically to file the paperwork for us. So no one made any money on this. This was simply about the fact that EPA in its own registration documents said they did not have all the data they should have. The data they did have was not reliable. It did not look fully at, in a sense, the tier two level examination of this pesticide. It didn't look at the long-term effects of the pesticide upon bees. So we basically went to the court and said the EPA has said they should not register it, and yet they did. EPA has said in their own documents that they needed more evidence, and yet they still went ahead and registered it. So this is what we filed in the court, basically asking the court, we agree EPA doesn't have all the information. Could you please tell EPA that they're right, they don't have all the information, so why did they register it?
Michelle, exactly. What do you anticipate EPA is going to do? Do you think that they're going to move on this quickly, or what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think they're trying to figure it out still, I think, because I know in talking to other reporters, they are not able to get EPA to comment on the ramifications of the opinion in this case. So they are trying to figure out, I think, what they're supposed to do. Certainly, they have, by the court's opinion, 45 days from the court's public opinion, sulfoxaflor will be illegal to use because it will not be registered as a pesticide for use anymore. So EPA now has to determine what's going to happen to the products that have sulfoxaflor in it that have already been sold. They're already sitting in a farmer's barn. They have to determine what they're going to do.
Michelle, what about the existing products that are out on the market? what happens with these products?
Well, and that, again, is something EPA is going to have to address, because are they going to grandfather things in? I have no idea. EPA has to then take the court's opinion and the court's decision and decide how that works within their regulations and what they're going to do. But in 45 days from the court's opinion, sufoxaflor will be illegal to use.
June, I'd like to say something about the significance of this sufoxaflor decision. And there's an interesting history here that escapes most people unless you're involved with this daily. All of this controversy was initially raised by the neonicotinoid clothianidin, and a conditional registration had been granted to that, and the condition has never been satisfied, even to this day. It's been illegally used on hundreds of millions of acres for 13 years. But because of the criticism of the conditional registration, the abuse of conditional registrations, initially, the EPA was going to give a conditional registration to sulfoxaflor because there were many of the same unanswered questions that surrounded clothianidin. But they made a slick bureaucratic move, and without any fanfare, they simply did a 180 and they granted sulfoxaflor a full registration. Now, the advantage that that gives them is if they were to give it a conditional registration, of course there would be conditions, and those conditions could be followed and monitored. By granting a full registration, by law, they're not required to revisit that decision for 15 years unless challenged. And fortunately, there were some individual beekeepers and beekeeping groups who did challenge that, and the judge's decision is the result.
Tom, can you share with our listeners a little bit more about the history with the chemicals that have been granted registration and why it was not possible for this action to have transpired back then?
Well, it's my understanding that there's a 45-day window after something is registered in which that registration can be appealed. And in the case of clothianidin, what happened was the condition, the primary condition for conditional registration was what's called the Cutler-Dupree study, which is a life cycle study, which was to determine the dangers associated with this chemical to honeybees. And that languished for several years. Finally, the conditional registration was granted in 2003. The Cutler-Dupree study wasn't delivered, I believe, until 2007. And Bayer came back and asked for further registration on mustard and cotton. EPA scientists reviewed the registration and concluded that the Cutler-Dupree study was invalid. Well, the EPA's reaction to that was to quietly turn around and do basically what they've done with sulfoxaflor. They granted clothianidin a full registration, even though it hadn't satisfied the conditions. And at that time, we simply were not well enough informed to know that that 45-day window was available to us. So we've been fighting the clothianidin decision for 13 years, and it's used on almost all the corn in the United States as a seed treatment, and the majority of soybeans. Over 200 million acres have been contaminated with this poison, and it has never been legally registered.
Tom, do you think that we'll wind up seeing sulfoxaflor appear in another form at some point in the future? I mean, what are they going to do with all of these chemicals?
Well, I don't know how they're going to address this. The decision, I think, was pretty clear. It invalidated what they have done. However, if we look back over the past 10 years, and certainly even before then, their conduct with respect to the pollinators, and I don't know how they performed in other arenas, but from the standpoint of pollinators and pesticides, just about every step they have taken has been intended to evade the law, subvert the law, undermine the law, And I suspect that we'll see some of the same thing with sulfoxaflor. They don't seem to have awakened to the fact that their responsibilities, their basic charter, is the protection, the prevention of unreasonable risk for the environment and mankind. That's their basic charter. Instead, they become a marketing agency for the chemical companies. I think individual workers probably would want to do the right thing. I think they're working at the direction of a deeply corrupted management, and the top of that management chain is Congress. And we've seen nothing from Congress because Congress apparently is on the payroll as well.
Do either of you know if, because of this decision, if there are any legal responsibilities that EPA must assume for any environmental damages that may occur because of the use of sulfoxaflor?
Well, I think certainly with government actions, while certainly you can file a lawsuit against the government, I think in the end I don't believe one will go anywhere, or two, that you actually can file a suit. Certainly when we look at so many different issues of some product gets used, let's talk about lead in paint. We all knew in 1937 lead caused developmental disabilities in children, and it was the lead in paint that would cause problems as people would sand it and things like that. So, but we did not ban lead in paint in this country until 1977. So when we started to abate all the windows and other friction points and things in houses, lead paint became an issue. Did the lead paint manufacturers fess up with any money to help remove lead paint from houses where there were children? No. If you want to try and sue them, I don't know, good luck. I think there was some agreement just made of going, oops, sorry, we kept lead in paint for way too long. Oh, well. So I think it should be with some of these pesticides.
I think it's unreasonable to expect that the beekeepers should enter into endless lawsuits against an agency which is supposed to be protecting them. We're out here dying. We're trying to keep our livelihoods together. And it's just ludicrous that we have to continually sue the EPA to see that they perform their responsibilities effectively. This is a deeply corrupted agency. And the author of Poison Spring said that would characterize the EPA. He'd had 25 years experience in this very agency, the division of the agency that we're working with or against now. And he characterized them as the pesticide mafia. And the further we go, the clearer that picture becomes. It's come into focus that that's exactly what we're dealing with. This is organized crime. Every step they have taken has been intended to avoid their responsibilities under the law, and nobody seems to be in the driver's seat.
But it also begs the question, if he had access to that documentation which proves what the powers that be at EPA were doing, why did he wait until he published the book to do something?
Well, for the same reason that we're not hearing from people from within the EPA right now. They're like most Americans. They have children, they have mortgages, they have car payments, and they don't want to jeopardize their career. And they know that if they speak out, that their career path is going to take a dive.
Well, then I hate to say it, but what you're saying about the beekeepers having to sue, it's almost as if you have no choice, because if the workers at EPA can't open up their mouths while it's happening, it's kind of like watching Hitler rise to power and doing nothing if you had an opportunity to do so. But to leave it for the beekeepers, and basically what's happening is the beekeepers are being positioned so that they have to go up against the farmers who they've had long-term relationships with. I mean, it's turning neighbor against neighbor. This is just preposterous.
Well, I've used the comparison. If I were to tell you that you had to go out on the interstate highway system and enforce the speed limits, you would say that I was crazy. And no, you weren't about to do that. But that's exactly the position that the beekeepers have been put in. They've been painted as the bad guys, the fly in the ointment. And that puts them at odds, just as you've said, June, that puts them at odds with the farmers, and the beekeepers need the farmers as much as the farmers need the beekeepers. It's been done intentionally. This is not an accident, and we can't continue to sue. They will bankrupt us.
Well, but you have to keep in mind, again, this the option of, like, the appeals court is an option of open to all agricultural commodity groups. So if the cotton growers don't like some decision, whether it's EPA or USDA, they can sue the government. And that is sometimes the only way we make change. Nobody's making a lot of money off doing this. It's always about regulation. It's administrative appeals. And if you do not have courageous people at EPA who will come out and take a stand and be the whistleblower, then it does fall to the people who are being harmed to say, fine, we will have to get the courts involved in order to make you a moral person. So that is the issue then becomes is beekeepers, far too much in their culture, don't like to go to the legal route. We are being forced to do that, but that will make our lives better as beekeepers. So if that is what we are being forced to do because we do not have enough morally courageous people at EPA or USDA, then that is what we have to do, like all commodity groups.
Thank you, Michelle.
I'd like to add one more thing, and that is that this can't continue. We've been fighting against these forces now for decades, really, and we can't hold out much longer. The public needs to take an interest in this because this affects everybody, not just the beekeepers. The beekeepers and the bees are the smoke alarm. And if something isn't done to change the corruption in this system very quickly, we won't be able to continue. It's that simple. No matter how hard we want to work, we won't make it. And we need changes. This is organized crime of the highest order.
And I'd like to add that certainly beekeepers just need to stand together as beekeepers. Whether you're a backyard beekeeper, a sideliner, or a commercial beekeeper, we are all here to protect the health of our honeybees. And in protecting our honeybees, we will protect our native pollinators. But we must stand together in the actions that we take to protect all of our bees.
I support that wholeheartedly.
Well, I just hope that the beekeepers do show solidarity and do stand up for their industry because it is a dying industry. And even though the PR campaign that industry has launched in their minds has been successful, it hasn't. Because I'm getting one email after the other, one phone call after the other, one message after the other across social media about the decline and how it's continuing and how people are puzzled because they don't understand what they're reading about in mainstream media, that it seems as though everything's fine, but meanwhile, what they're experiencing up close and personal is the exact opposite. Even this past growing season, I saw one monarch butterfly, and I maintain two butterfly habitats on my property. And I have seen a number of butterflies, but only one monarch for the entire season. Another friend who's a master gardener said he's seen zero. So we shouldn't be seeing such low or non-existent numbers. We should be seeing an abundance of butterflies. We should be seeing an abundance of all pollinators. And these chemicals are really taking their toll. So I sincerely hope, Michelle, that the beekeepers do pull together and stand up for their industry to protect it and preserve it.
You know, I do hope the beekeepers do continue to stand together. We've got to stand together as beekeepers.
Without the bees, we have no beekeepers.
Well, yes.
Without the beekeepers, we have no bees.
Well, Michelle, thank you so much for being on the show today. Could you just remind our listeners what your website is and how people can support your organization?
Yes, the website of the Pollinator Stewardship Council is at www.pollinatorstewardship.org, and you can support us through supporting directly specific projects that we have, whether it's our bee understanding project or our hive tracking project, our advocacy work for our honeybees and beekeepers, or you can become a member of our organization and support our work.
Thank you. Tom, thank you so much for participating in today's show. It's always great to have your perspective. You're basically the only voice that we really have as far as putting the issues into perspective as far as they pertain to the beekeeping community.
Well, thank you, June, and I'm thankful for this opportunity. I think this is very important. We've been talking about this for several years now, and it's only getting worse, and it has to change for the better. This affects every American, not just the beekeepers.
And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic Bee Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.